This is the City AM Podcast with me, Sam Torrance, brought to you by Aberdeen, the new name for Standard Life Aberdeen. The Scottish Open, proudly sponsored by Aberdeen.
Hello and welcome to the City AM Podcast. I'm Frank Dallarez, Sports Editor of City AM, and I'm very pleased to say that joining me again today is Sam Torrance, MBE, OBE, Ryder Cup hero as player and captain, and regular columnist for City AM. This is the second of three podcasts around the Open Championship, which takes place this week at Royal St George's. Today we'll be discussing what went on at the Aberdeen Scottish Open over the last few days, and taking a look ahead to the Open itself, the history, the course, and this year's field. But first, the Aberdeen Scottish Open, where Australian Minwoo Lee won the biggest title of his young career after a three-man playoff with England's Matt Fitzpatrick and Thomas Dietrich of Belgium. John Rahm, Justin Thomas and Ian Poulter were all in the mix too on an exciting final day at the Renaissance Club in North Berwick. And Sam, I'd just like to ask you, first of all, what did you think of Minwoo Lee's win and the manner that he did it?
I thought it was fantastic, Frank. He handled the pressure beautifully. On the 72nd hole, he had a 15-footer for birdie, which would have won it outright without the playoff, and they left it just an inch short right in the middle of the hole. But he picked himself up, dusted himself down, and won it in the first extra hole of a playoff with a fabulous birdie.
And Thomas Dietrich, obviously, was up there, very unlucky with a putt that he was about to make when the hooter went off for the weather delay. How tough was that on him, and what sort of consolation will it be that he's made it into the Open as a qualifier?
Yeah, a huge consolation getting in the Open for Lee Minwoo as well, and also, forgotten his name, Jack Senior. I don't know why I forget Jack Senior. I'm a senior. Maybe that's why I forget it. But, yeah, they actually knew before they went into the playoff that those three had made the Open. So the top two have been quite happy. But it was a shock to the system when the hooter went off, because it was kind of in the middle of his backswing when he had about a 4 or 5 footer for par on the par 3, 13th or 14th. And he missed it. And then he had to wait an hour and a half to go back onto the course. So it would obviously have upset him. But he picked himself up and... he played, there was only one hole in the playoff, but it was a beautiful birdie from the winner. But, Fitzpatrick had a good shot, but no, not to be.
Matt Fitzpatrick, who you mentioned there, I mean, he won the DP World Tour Championship right at the end of last season in Dubai. He's had a steady year, but this was his best finish out of 2021 so far. How encouraged do you think he'll be by his progression, his return to form in time for the Open?
Yeah, it's a great finish for Fitzpatrick. He would have been disappointed. He played really well down the stretch. He had a bad start to the round, drove in a couple of fairway bunkers first two holes and made great pars. And got it together. And look, to me, to be honest, with 4 or 5 holes to go, I just thought he was going to coast the victory, but it didn't happen. Couldn't get the putts in at the right time. But he'll go down to Royal St. George's with great form. No one beat him over 72 holes. He lost it in a playoff. He does seem to have the perfect game for seaside golf, although his record hasn't been that fantastic in it. But he has the game for it. With a caddy like Billy Foster on his back, I think he's going to do well next week.
And he wasn't the only Englishman to put his hand up at the Aberdeen Scottish Open. Ian Poulter, of course, producing a round of 63, his best ever on the European Tour, to finish one shot off the playoff. What about that from him?
Yeah, magnificent for Poulter. He's got many agendas going on, Ryder Cup, winning the Open next week and winning the Aberdeen Scottish Open yesterday. What a day he had. He almost sold his tee shot on 17 when he was 16 under and missed it from 4 or 5 feet. But then went on to another great drive at 18, another exemplary iron to about 8 feet and hold that for birdie to finish 17 under, which ultimately was one shot behind the three-man playoff. But that's great form for Poulter. You know, he is the postman. He does always deliver. And it's certainly a message to Captain Harrington about the Ryder Cup later in the year.
On that note, as somebody who's been in Patrick Harrington's shoes before, What would you do with Ian Poulter? Would he be on your side?
Well, I certainly wouldn't give him to the Americans, that's for sure. No, he would definitely be on my side. He's a legend of the Ryder Cup, you know. And once it's in your blood, it's in your blood. And he really has as big a heart as anyone out there. He'll fight to the last breath. And he'd be a great man on your side.
And just lastly, with the Scottish Open, John Rahm, the man to beat in North Berwick. He started the week pretty much where he left off the US Open with a great couple of rounds. What did you think about how it went for him in the end?
Well, Rahm, I'll just give a wee mention to Lucas Herbert, who won last week in Ireland, who was fantastic. And he came so close to winning again, one shot out of the playoff. Just one to keep your eye on. But Rahm, after on Friday night, I thought he was just going to run away with it. He looked magnificent. He's the US Open champion, had a couple of weeks off, coming out, looking great, strong. But it didn't happen over the weekend. And he missed a flurry of short putts, one from as little as 18 inches, which actually seemed to hit the back of the hole and come straight back out. But he only finished two shots behind, and he held nothing over the weekend. I think it's... He would be disappointed not to win. I think he's the kind of man that's capable of just wanting to win every time he plays and is capable of it. So he'll be going to Royal St George's with a great mindset, no question.
And last week we spoke about what a high-quality field it was at the Aberdeen Scottish Open. The way it turned out with all the drama on the last day, was that just a great advert for the tournament as a whole?
Oh, incredible, Frank. Even Justin Thomas got a glimpse of the lead in the last day. Four of the top five in the world. It's the greatest field ever assembled for the Scottish Open. They've employed Padraig Harrington to redesign the course a wee bit, or give it a few tweaks with the original design of Tom Doak. And it looks like they're trying to place it there for many years to come, which would be fantastic for Scotland, fantastic for Aberdeen. The sponsors, and great for the players because it's a fabulous course. Well, and also, Frank, was the Jock McVicar Award. Jock McVicar, one of the doyens of Scottish writing, great Scottish golf writer, been a friend of mine for so many years, and he sadly passed away. And they very kindly have brought out an award for the leading Scottish player at the Scottish Open, and it was won in its inaugural year by Richie Ramsay. So well done to him, and very well done to Aberdeen for remembering someone as fine as Jock McVicar.
Okay, well, thoughts now turn to the Open, the world's oldest golf tournament, which takes place for the 149th time this week. We'll come on to your specific memories of playing there and playing Royal St George's in a moment. But more generally, what makes the Open so special?
The Open Championship, what makes it so special? Oh, dear. History, I guess. It's the Open. It's not even the British Open. It's just the Open. It is, without doubt, one of the best tournaments you'll ever play in. Its history is second to none. And I don't know what else I can say. I think I played in 29 of them. And enjoyed every single one.
Well, that brings us neatly on to the next thing I was going to ask you, because, of course, it is at Royal St George's, where you finished fifth in 1981, which, of course, I'm sure you remember vividly. What do you recall from that tournament?
Playing with Lee Trevino in the third round. I had a hole-in-one on 16. And I lifted him up there, and he screamed at me, Sammy, watch my back. He was a great friend of mine, is a great friend of mine, Trevino. I double bogeyed the last hole, the 72nd hole, through aggression, to be honest. But that was unlucky, but it was self-inflicted, so it was not really unlucky. But it's a difficult course. It's a great links course. It's a lot of zigzagging. It's not like the front nine goes straight out and the back nine comes straight in. You're all over the place. So a lot of holes, your left to right wind, and then you turn right to left, then you're downwind, you're into the wind. It's a fantastic design, but a very difficult golf course in wind. And I think there will be wind, which sure is the seaside.
other than the ones that you've played in, or the ones that went particularly well for you, do you have a favourite Open Championship that you like to sort of rewatch? Is there one that stands out for you? I mean, obviously there's the Jewel in the Sun.
The Turnberry, Nicholas and Watson, was beyond belief. That's one I could watch forever. But also the Mickelson and Stenson one at Troon was equally as good, I think. I never thought I would ever say that you could have the golf played as well as it was played again. And they did. They were amazing, Mickelson and Stenson. It's just amazing. And Stenson came out on top. And the same with Nicholas and Watson. They were both amazing. They were Seve's finished in 84 at St Andrews. For delight in the face and memories. Doesn't get much better than that. But for close finishes in golf played, there's so many. I mean, Costantino Rocca holing his putt at the last from off the front of the green to eventually lose to John Daly in a playoff. I mean, that's why they open you. I mean, we could sit here for an hour and I can come up with more stories, if you like, about great finishes. Actually, I'll tell you another one straight away, Frankie. In 1963, when Champagne Tony Lima won the Open at St Andrews, what year was it? I think I was 9, and I was halfway up a lamppost on the right-hand side of the last fairway when Champagne Tony Lima won the Open in 63. I was 10, actually. So I've got many great memories about it. But it is, it's one of the most special events to play in.
And were there any others that you played in other than 81 that you're particularly fond of?
I don't think we need to go there. That was my best finish in the Open 5th. I tried it. I banged my head off the wall many times trying to get a win, and it never happened. But I enjoyed every one.
Well, let's talk about this year's field, and obviously John Rahm is the bookies' favourite, who we just spoke about a moment ago. He's continued his good form. You got Rory McIlroy, who's also a short price. Despite his recent struggles, just because of his excellent Open record. Is Rahm's form the key here? Is he the man to beat on that basis?
I would 100% Rahm's the man to beat, I would say. Even though Dustin Johnson's gone back to number one. I don't know how he's gone back to number one. I guess it's the way the system works. He didn't even play last week. But that would be why he probably retained it. But his form's not been great. But Rahm, there's no question he's playing best golf on the planet right now. It's going to be a tough course. It's going to be a lot to handle. It's very difficult to hit. There's three or four fairways out there at Royal St. George's that it's very difficult to hit them. And that can frustrate players. So we may see a glimmer into whether John Rahm, his attitude to not mishaps, just bad bounces, let's say, see how he can handle them at this fantastic links course. So, but he is the man in form.
And you mentioned he just slips off the number one ranking there. I mean, he's obviously still right up there, but is that something that you think will give him extra motivation this week?
Well, it would, I don't think, no. I mean, the way he dismissed his US Open win, like almost an hour after it's done, like, okay, it's on to the next one now. It's done. It's up there, I've done it now. And I think he has got a fantastic mind. And I don't think anyone will bother him. He'll just be there to win this week. Nothing else, that's all that matters to him.
And Rory McIlroy, a couple of disappointing tournaments in a row, missed the cut this time in Scotland. Has this Open just come at the wrong time for him, do you think?
Yeah, 100%. I don't think any of the majors this year have come at the right time for Rory. He's in a game change. He's in a swing change, a coach change. He looks very close. I thought he was very close last week to swing me great, but I mean, he missed the cut. You know, what can you say? And this is an even tougher course. A lot of stuff has to be taken at this place, St. George's. I mean, I say it is a great test, but there is things that can happen out there that really test your mentality on the course and how you can go over things that happen and come back and make some birdies. But McIlroy's form's not great, but he is Rory McIlroy.
Okay. It's been a tournament where Europeans have dominated in recent years. Only four of the last 14 Open champions have been American. This year we've got Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka, Xander Schauffele, Justin Thomas, Jordan Spieth, Bryson DeChambeau, Colin Morikawa, and of course Phil Mickelson too. Who out of that bunch are you most looking forward to seeing, and who do you think can put up the best challenge?
Well, they're all capable of it. Dustin Johnson's the one with the poorest form coming in, really. Schauffele, I think he was running up to Molinari in the Open, so he's proven that he can perform in an Open Championship. Morikawa, 1,000,000% got the game to win an Open. No question about that. Koepka's form, fifth and fourth his last two starts. He's a multiple major winner. He was fourth in 2019 and sixth in 2017 and tenth in 2016. So he's had three top tens, but not got the win yet. But he would be a good win player too. He will, and he looks like he can handle adversity comfortably.
What about DeChambeau? Somebody who we spoke so much about last year, but it hasn't quite happened for him lately.
Well, yeah, I'm trying to remember the description of how they describe the drive and gun job. I don't know how they describe your second shot. You know, you just smash it as far as you can down there. It doesn't matter where it ends up in. You can hammer it out there onto the green. That's not really what happens in Open Championships. We saw a lot of it last week. A lot of rough that is just impossible to get out of. Maybe that is the way forward. And DeChambeau, he's going to have to. I don't think he can ever get out of second gear. If he starts giving it those big drives, and you know, he only needs to hit it 20, 30 yards offline, it's going to be a lot of trouble. But he is a major winner.
We didn't get a home win in the Euros in the end, but maybe we could in the Open. Let's talk about some of the English contenders looking to end 29 years of hurt since the last English win. I know how fond you are of Lee Westwood. Would that be your choice for a feel-good win to follow Darren Clarke in 2011 at the same venue?
Yeah, well, they are best mates, so that would be quite appropriate if this could be his major win that Darren waited so long for. Maybe this could be that. And he played great last week. He had a couple of double bogeys in the third round from nowhere. Otherwise, he'd have been right there up at the top at the end. But Westwood's, he's a good red wine. He gets better by the year. He's a very solid player, and he's got great heart, and he's very happy off the course. It would be a fairy tale win, and the connection with the last winner there, Darren Clarke, would be fantastic. Tyrrell Hatton, one of my favourite players. He didn't quite pull it off last week, but he has the game, the temperament. That's another test for him round there. Justin Rose. Well, Justin seems to be in a bit of a lull at the moment, and he needs to find something. Wouldn't want him to be missing the Ryder Cup. But Fitzpatrick, for me, would be one of the strongest British contenders, without doubt. Definitely has the game, has the talent, has the caddy, everything going for him. Paul Casey's had a fantastic season. He's going to make the Ryder Cup. Fabulous player. But again, he's quite a high ball flighter, but he is capable at any height, so you would have to give him some hope. Poulter, no question, he has the game and the mindset to do fantastically well there. And Richard Bland, let's not forget Richard Bland, his 457th tournament, I think it was, gets his first win, and then he just almost goes and wins the US Open the next week. He was leading after 36. He didn't almost go and win it, but he was leading after 36, but that would be another fairy tale winner. But all in all, it's going to be a fantastic Open.
Yeah, well, you mentioned Justin Rose there. Just to go a little deeper on him, I mean, he's not won since 2019. He's really slipped down the rankings, in danger of falling out the top, well, as well as top 50 even. What do you think's happened there, and what does he need to do to turn it around?
Just a lull, Frank. They're tough to work out when you're playing. You know, sometimes when you're playing well, you wonder how you ever hit a bad shot, and then sometimes when you're playing badly, you wonder how the hell am I ever going to hit a good shot. I'm not sure. Justin, I love his game. He's always been one of my favorites. He's a beautiful golf swing, great temperament, and an all-round great competitor. Maybe he could turn it around this week, find some form. He needs it for the Ryder Cup.
And another English name there that we didn't mention, but Tommy Fleetwood, of course, second 2 years ago to Shane Lowry. What about his chances?
And Shane Lowry, defending champion, we're not going there. But yeah, Fleetwood, obviously a great wind player, tough competitor, but form has not been fantastic. You know, we're talking about winning the majors now, so you really need to be sharp and ready. But I would never discount them. And, you know, Shane Lowry, when he won the Irish Open as an amateur, which was just beyond belief to win such a prestigious event as an amateur, you could see golden things were coming for that young man. And they did come. Port Rush Open champion, no Open last year, so he's still defending Open champion. He's had to give the trophy back today. I'm sure he's a little bit disappointed, but would love to pull it back again, and who knows? If it makes some Irish eyes smile.
Well, he's not the only former winner in there, obviously. Lowry, Francesco Molinari, Stenson, who we mentioned earlier. Are there any of those other former winners that you think could emerge over the weekend?
Well, obviously, if you won the Open, you know how to get the job done. So any one of them, within reason, could certainly win it again. There's nothing, no one sticks out in my mind that's got the form going. You know, Mickelson possibly. He is an extraordinary human being, but we shall wait and see.
Well, Sam, unless there's anything else that you'd like to say about the Open, we'll wrap it up there. But I'm sure it'll be a tremendous week of golf at Royal St George's. That's all for this week. Thank you, Sam, for sharing your insights and your memories. We'll be back next week to discuss what went on at the 149th Open. But until then, goodbye.
That was the City AM podcast with me, Sam Torrance, brought to you by Aberdeen, the new name for Standard Life Aberdeen. The Scottish Open, proudly sponsored by Aberdeen.